So looking back over the entire kind of the stretch over the 13-year period, do you know how much it was you spent in that time? Do you have like a cumulative number?
I think it transpires that I transacted about £2 million worth of bets online.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the podcast. Today, we are talking about something a little bit more serious, something that's definitely prevalent in society nowadays. We're talking about gambling, but specifically, we're talking about gambling addiction. On the podcast today, we have Patrick Foster. Now, Patrick Foster is an ex-gambling addict who was addicted for 13 years. And in this podcast, he describes the deterioration of his life over that course, over that 13 years. And honestly, this is one of the most insane, unbelievable stories that I've heard on the podcast for a very long time. Before we start this podcast, if you could do me a huge favor and hit that like button, subscribe button, five-star button, whatever it is, wherever you are, I'd really appreciate it. It honestly helps more than you know, and the more likes and subscribes and all that kind of stuff we can get, the more incredible guests we can get on the podcast. My name is Harrison Brown, and this is the Into the Mind podcast. If you're watching or listening, I hope this helps. Private school, and it's wild how quickly things can turn for people, especially when they go down the routes of drugs or gambling or these highly, highly addictive, kind of all-encompassing things that they can go down and the different roads that people can take. How did you take that first step into gambling? Was there like a pivotal moment that you can remember that you got kind of a rush from it and thought, this is amazing. I want to do this more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, gambling wasn't really part of my life at all until I was 19. It wasn't something that any of my kind of friends at the time did, certainly not my family. I was obviously aware of it, but it wasn't part of my life. I didn't really have any interest in it, to tell the truth. And then kind of shortly after I arrived at university, I was still playing cricket at the time. One Saturday morning, I got introduced to it by a group of friends. It was just something that they did. And we walked into a betting shop in Durham where I was at university. I'd never really placed a bet myself. The only thing I knew about gambling was kind of dad once a year would put a bet on a horse in the Grand National for each member of the family. And that's kind of what I thought gambling was, to be honest. But we walked into this betting shop and I didn't really know what was going on. But the moment I walked into this place, I always find it really hard to describe, but I loved everything about it. Being obsessed with sport, there was sport on all the TV screens. Everybody was talking about it. And I was in there, I was kind of trying to take on what was going on. I spent most of the time I was in there watching a guy playing on a machine. He was playing roulette. And I watched him sort of feed £20 notes into this machine for a while, eventually kind of punched it, kicked it, stormed out the shop. And I sort of looked at this bloke and thought, God, what's wrong with him? And I sat down in front of this machine. I actually had £2 in my pocket left over from the night before. I put my £2 in this machine. The last number to come up on the machine was green zero. It was the only number on a roulette machine that was different from all the others. And me being me, I sort of thought, well, what are the chances of it happening twice in a row? So I put this £2 in the machine, just put it all on green zero. And 12 seconds later, it came in. £2 became £72. And I can honestly never, ever explain the feeling that moment gave me. I always say I've never had it before, and the irony is I'd actually never have it again. I understand now I probably spent the next 13 years trying to replicate that feeling unsuccessfully. But the rush and buzz that it gave me, the fact that everybody who kind of saw it went mad, did nothing for an already sizable ego. And it was from that moment onwards that I was hooked. I don't believe that I was addicted immediately, but I use the term hooked because I loved it. And all I wanted to do from that moment on was to do it again, to try and win more money. But actually, it was as much the rush and buzz that the anticipation of whether the bet would come in or not that I loved as much as the outcome.
Well, yeah. And do you think you got a sense of like validation the same as sports from it? You know, when you do something really good in a game of cricket, the crowd will go mad and everyone will stand up and you'll get that kind of ovation. Do you think it's the same kind of process, the same dopamine receptors that it was maybe attaching itself to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at the time I was still playing high level cricket and I never realized it until actually cricket didn't work out. Things didn't materialize as I wanted them to. And a year later, my cricket career was over because I got released. My contract didn't get renewed. And I found that really hard to come to terms with. So gambling at that point started to play a different part in my life, because not only was it a way of kind of escaping the way I was feeling, the fact that I was really struggling to come to terms with it, but more importantly, as you just mentioned, it was actually the closest thing I could find that replicated the feelings that I used to get from playing high level sport, because it gave me this kind of instant response, instant reaction, gratification, validation. And that was really, really addictive. But also being super competitive, which I am and always have been, I would say gambling's like a drug for competitive people, because it's all about winning and losing. And it gave me that on tap. And I just love the fact that I could get everything that comes with that literally at a click of a button.
And it's set up to be addictive, as in like the actual casinos as well. They are set up to have no natural light coming in. It's all synthetic light so that you don't know what time of day it is. The temperature is set to the perfect temperature so that you don't need to go to the bathroom as often. You don't find it too cold or too warm. Everything is set up in these casinos that to kind of make them addictive, especially when you look at, you know, your phone, the betting apps on your phone now. They give you fireworks when you win, which obviously you feel good about. It's like a dopamine rush. Is there specific things in these casinos and where you betted that you notice them doing to keep people more hooked?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of debate about some of the practices that go on within gambling and the industry, and I think rightly so. I think there is no doubt that some of the products are very, very addictive. They're actually designed to be that way, as you just said. They're designed to keep you engrossed. They obviously pay out, so it makes you think that that's going to happen, and then they take it away. So there is no doubt that a lot of the products are incredibly addictive, particularly casino games, slots, those kind of things. I think sports betting is slightly different. But there are also practices that go on that mean you are kind of, you remain engaged. And when I wrote the book that I did about my story, I talk about some of the things that used to happen, like when I used to lose a lot of money very quickly, I used to get rewarded with free bets. To basically keep me going and keep me playing. That said, there does have to be some personal responsibility because nobody made me or forced me to place a bet in the first place. I was choosing to do it. When I first started gambling, I recognized that you could lose and that if you lose, that money was gone. But I think the fact that there was always something pulling me back. And as you say, the addictive nature of a lot of these things mean for some people who are that way inclined, who have that sort of personality, which I'm a big believer in, it is a bit like a drug. And I talk about it being my drug of choice for numerous different reasons. And that's where actually when I sort of stopped and all people became aware of what was going on, what I found really difficult is when people's response was, well, it's gambling, you're an idiot, why didn't you just stop? Because there was this kind of lack of appreciation and understanding that for me, it was just like being addicted to a drug that you put in your body. I knew I needed to stop. In many ways, I wanted to stop. I simply couldn't. And I needed that fix, that hit, that dopamine rush that came with it for so long. And obviously, the longer it went on, the more I needed, the bigger the win needed to be, the more frequently I needed to do it.
Do you have any form of ADHD?
Very good question. I am almost certain that I do. I have never been diagnosed with ADHD. I know a lot of gambling addicts who retrospectively, when they are in recovery, get diagnosed with ADHD. I know that there is a lot of research being done. There are very strong links to people who are ADHD, who suffer from issues with particularly behavioral addictions. And to me, it all makes sense. The only reason I haven't gone down that route is because whether I have or not, I now have such strong self-awareness, which I never used to. I'm able to kind of self-manage it. I'm at peace with that. And I never want, and I've got to be careful what I say here, but I never want it to be an excuse. And that's probably not the right word, but I think people listening will know what I mean. If I I'm diagnosed with ADHD, I can then turn around and say, oh, well, it was my ADHD that caused all the issues. For me, I think in my own personal recovery, that would be counterproductive the way I am. But I know that there is some very strong links and it all makes perfect sense. And as I say, I probably exhibit a lot of the behaviors and characteristics of somebody who is diagnosed ADHD.
Yeah. You definitely find it's more prevalent. I don't want to generalize, but people with ADHD have particularly addictive personalities because they kind of idle on just a slightly lower level of dopamine than the normal person. So constantly they're trying to reach that normal level. And if you're dopamine hitting, say on gambling or drugs, it's something that you need more and more of because the more you hit on it, the less dopamine it releases. And that's why something like that can transform so quickly into a really serious addiction. Was there a point that you kind of identified where it was no longer, you know, once every weekend, it was becoming once a day, and then it was maybe upping the hours of how long you were in the gambling? Was there a point that you identified that you were kind of addicted to gambling?
Yeah, there were numerous points, I think. And I always look back now and I say, well, even from the beginning, I recognized that my relationship with it was different from a lot of people around me, because no amount was ever kind of enough. I always wanted to do it more. But also there was, from a very early stage, there was a lot of kind of secrecy around it, because I used to do it with other people and there was transparency, but then I would do it a second, a third, a fourth time a day without anybody else knowing about it. And I didn't want other people to know about it. And I just needed to do it more for it to be bigger than other people. I guess the point where I really recognized that I had a serious addiction was kind of fast forward a few years. I'd left university. I was working in the city. And I had a huge win I won £35,000 off a football accumulator in 2010, which is obviously a life-changing sum of money. And my reaction to that was very different to what it would be for normal people, in the sense that I didn't tell anybody I won that money that night. I lost it in the matter of weeks. When it was gone, I wanted it back, and I wanted it back as quickly as possible. And I started trying to win it back. And it was at that point that I recognized I had a serious problem, because actually that's not normal behavior. Firstly, most people would have been shouting from the rooftops that they'd won £35,000. They probably would have done something sensible with it, but not me. And so that was probably the biggest telling point. And I always talk about this, but kind of 6.5 months later, once the money had gone, I was starting to get myself into debt. It was starting to impact all other areas of my life. It was impacting me financially, of course, emotionally. I was struggling with my mental health. I was putting on a lot of weight. The signs were there, and I knew them. And that was the point where my biggest regret is not doing something about it. Actually, I changed my career. At that point, I went from working in the city to becoming a teacher, because I honestly believed that if I changed the environment I was in, my lifestyle that drastically, that would get rid of the problem and that would solve it. And that was the only reason I did it. And of course, by that point, it was too late because I was addicted.
And £35,000, was that your biggest win? That's humongous.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't transpire to be my biggest win, because at the end of my story, at the kind of culmination, I had another win, which was huge, which I subsequently kind of put on the final bet I ever placed. But at that point, it was the biggest win I'd had by a distance. And this was the point which I never understood until I stopped, where it became like a drug. Because now, for me, if I didn't win that amount of money, it didn't give me the same feeling, the same rush, the same buzz. And I essentially started trying to win that amount of money every time I did it by increasing my stakes. And that was where it sort of spiraled completely out of control. And I always say to people now, of course, gambling is kind of sold as a form of entertainment and a hobby. And yes, it is in some ways, or it is for some people. But people gamble to win money. That's why you do it. And when you win is actually when you're most vulnerable. A lot of people don't realize that. And most people I know who go on to have a pathological gambling addiction, they have a big win. It's all relative what that big win is for people, but they have a big win at some point, and that's often the catalyst for problems further down the line. So I always say to people now, if you ever do have a big win, which is of course what you're trying to do when you gamble, the best thing you'll ever do is get out and never do it again.
Yeah, and you definitely, I've seen this amongst my friends. You know, I've got people that I've been in a casino with, and they've won £40 and they walk away from the table.
Yes.
But then I've also got other friends that win, you know, maybe £100 and it's straight back on, whatever it might be, blackjack, whatever it is, it's straight back on. And it's almost like a compulsion, like they can't help themselves from doing it. But there is some people that seem to have the willpower to say no. Is there a different personality type that you think can do that rather than keep placing the bet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not stupid. I recognize that there are lots of people that gamble and don't have a problem with it. They're not gambling addicts like I was or am. But I think it is about understanding yourself and your relationship with it. And I knew that pretty quickly. I have an incredibly addictive personality. I am obsessive. I'm compulsive. My addictive personality manifests it in all itself in all sorts of weird and wonderful ways now. The difference is I'm at peace with it. I'm able to manage it. And I recognize that with gambling, it is something that I simply cannot control. And I wish I was one of those people that could put a £5 bet on the football every weekend. And if it wins, I win that money. I spend it on something nice. If it loses, it's money I can afford to lose, and I move on, but I don't try and win it back as quickly as possible. And I've got lots of people around me that can have that relationship with gambling. I just simply can't. I don't know what it exactly is that differentiates somebody from being that kind of person or not. But there is a very big difference, and you're absolutely right. There are people who are like that. And I certainly was the opposite.
Yeah, I think I would be the same. I think I would be continuing on, to be honest. I've got ADHD, so I think that things that give me that dopamine rush, whether it's a lot of it's to do with my work at the moment, but whether that's, you know, out in a night out drinking or whatever, I'll take it kind of to the extreme. I can't really stop. And I think through kind of teaching and through the podcast, actually, we've had some professionals on and they've been like, yeah, it's probably ADHD that's making you kind of compulsive in that way, to kind of keep dopamine hitting. Is there a point where, so you were within cricket, you then went into gambling, and you said that you changed your life and you went into teaching to try and change the environment. Can you talk me through that? What kind of happened in that transition?
Yeah, so in 2011, after I'd won this money, lost it, started to get myself into debt, started to develop other very unhealthy habits and kind of coping strategies with a lot of the feelings that came with it, like embarrassment, shame, guilt, stupidity. I honestly, as I said earlier, I thought, well, if I just take myself out of this environment, out of London, and become a teacher, that's not how teachers will behave. I won't have the time. I won't have the same amount of money. That will get rid of the problem. And I am strong enough, in inverted commas, to deal with this myself. So I moved out of London. I moved to Oxford, where I got a job teaching. And actually, for a few weeks, it did help, because I didn't do these things quite as much. My lifestyle started to improve slightly. My mental health was in a much better place. And it was at that point that I kind of thought, oh, I've solved the problem. But then actually other things started to go wrong in my life, not just gambling. And the problem, I believe, with an addiction is that when you're faced with difficulty, a challenge or adversity, you run away and you escape to what feels to you like a safe place, which other people simply can't understand, but it's actually the most dangerous place you can be. And gambling for me was so addictive, because when I was wrapped up in that world, when I was betting on a horse race, spinning a roulette wheel, playing on a slot machine, I didn't have to think about anything else. I didn't have to engage with reality. And that was so addictive, when I didn't like all those feelings and the emotions when I wasn't doing it. And so I just escaped to that place all the time. Just like I believe that alcoholics, when they're drinking, it gives them that feeling. And so they want to be in that state all the time.
Yeah. And did that, how did that transpire through the kind of the schooling career, being a teacher? Did it get to a point where you had to leave that position, or how did that kind of go?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time I was incredibly good at hiding it. I actually continued, it's hard for people to believe, but I continued to be a pretty good teacher. I think I was reasonably successful in that career for the time that I was doing it. But what a lot of people didn't realize is what was going on in the background and the toll that was taking on me, because it was exhausting. I was kind of waking up every day and I was putting on this mask. I'd go into school, I'd do my job as if everything was fine and everything was great. And then I'd go home at night and I wouldn't go to sleep. And it would just take its toll, and cracks started to appear. But not just that, because my life was unraveling in so many different ways, but financially particularly. And obviously money's stressful, and I don't particularly like money, but you need it. And I didn't have any. And over time, once I'd exhausted basically every avenue, so to speak, to get money or borrow money without thinking about the consequences, I then, out of desperation, started to essentially abuse my position as a teacher, because I started to approach people connected to the school for money. And that would eventually cost me my career. And I think that is the thing for a lot of addicts, particularly gambling addicts, is your job is something that you can often continue to do. But at some point, I believe that that will get compromised as well, whether that's stealing from employers like so many people end up doing, or whether it just gets to the point where, because of everything else that's going on, you can't do your job properly. You end up losing it one way or another. But for me, it was quite a unique situation. And so eventually, rightly so, people became aware of what was going on, and I got found out. And it was actually that point, it was like a perfect storm for me, because it was at that point where I knew I was going to lose my job. I was potentially facing criminal convictions. I had no money. I was going to lose my house. That it all came to a head, and that was my rock bottom, so to speak.
And how did that work? So did you speak to your students and request that the parents were giving money, or did you speak to the parents directly, or how did that kind of work?
I went directly to the parents, because of the type of school that I worked in. I had sort of relationships with parents. I had direct contact with them. I wasn't stupid. I recognized that some of these people were wealthy people. I had good relationships with them, and I'm not proud of what I did, but I started to abuse those relationships, because I basically lied to people. And people ultimately liked me. They respected me. They were worried about me. And because they had the money to lend me and I was promising to pay them back, it seemed okay, but I couldn't, because I was obviously gambling it all away. And actually, I knew at some point I was going to get found out. I had to. I just didn't know when that was going to be. And as I say, it all came to a head in March 2018 when I was found out. And that's when things kind of spiraled or descended in a short period of time into kind of the mayhem that ensued, that looking back was actually the best thing that happened.
I was going to say that. Do you think in the back of your mind you maybe wanted to be caught, you wanted to be found out so that people could give you the help? I feel like with gambling especially, there's such an element of shame to it that men particularly, they don't like to talk about this kind of stuff. And I think that people go down such a hole because they actually just need other people to realize what they're going through. Does that kind of make sense?
Without doubt. It's really hard to explain or articulate unless you've been there. But the stigma and shame that is attached to a gambling addiction is so strong and so powerful. I could not admit it to people. I didn't want to admit it to people. I would never, ever belittle any other addiction. But I honestly think if I was addicted to drugs or alcohol, I think I would have found it easier to admit it, because I think people, it's more acceptable. People understand it. They go, okay, I can see that. I can see how you would get addicted to those things. But gambling, it's like you think in your head people are going to think, well, you're just an idiot. And there is no doubt that right at the end, when it had become a matter of life or death for me, I wanted to get found out. I was so desperate for the help that I eventually got. I knew I needed it, but it took me to lose everything or almost everything to make that decision or to tell somebody. And I guess that's part of the reason why I share my story now, in the hope that it might encourage people that aren't quite at that point, who are struggling, to do something about it sooner, because actually people's reaction is often very different to what you think it's going to be. And the sooner you address the problem, the less big or bad it will become. But I think the other complication about a gambling addiction is the irony of it is, weirdly, the only thing you ever think's going to solve it is the thing that's caused it in the first place. No alcoholic has ever tried to drink themselves sober, but as a gambling addict, you think, well, it's all about money. If I can win all the money back, if I can pay off my debts, if I can get rid of the financial problems, everything else will be okay. And so many people who are in that deep hole, they are always saying to themselves, okay, I'm going to keep going till I win the money back, till I get myself even or financially stable, however you want to describe it, and then I'll stop. But actually, they need to understand it's got nothing to do with the money. And no amount of money would actually ever be enough for a gambling addict like me.
So you've gone through this point with the students at the school and the school kind of finding out about this habit, the gambling addiction. And then did you continue placing bets after that, or was that the point that you kind of everything came to a head?
Yeah, well, I knew at that point that I was going to lose my house. There was no way I could carry on living. My house came with the school, the job that I did. So if I lost my job, there was no way I was going to continue living in my house with my girlfriend. So I knew I was going to lose my house. I knew I was going to lose my job. There was no way I could carry on being a teacher at that school, let alone, there's no way I could continue being a teacher, let alone at that school. And I knew, or I thought, I would face criminal convictions because I'd been keeping all this secret. So only I knew I'd committed fraud to a degree, theft. I'd stolen money off people and other things, and forgery. I'd forged signatures on contracts that I'd signed to borrow money off people. And so I genuinely thought I would end up in prison. And as I said, of course, what I should have done at that point is I should have kind of reached out for help, but I thought I could gamble my way out of it. And it happened to be the start of the Cheltenham Horse Racing Festival, the biggest horse racing festival in the world, completely coincidentally. And I thought that gave me the perfect opportunity to essentially try and win all the money back. I thought to myself the whole way through this period that I would still lose my house and my job, but at least I wouldn't be in prison. I can pay everybody back and ultimately life can continue. But if that didn't happen, then I had no option but to end everything. And so it really had become a matter of life and death. And essentially what happened is during that week, I lost. It was so stressful. I did it all day, every day. And then on the Thursday, and this was having borrowed a huge sum of money off somebody I'd told a lie to. And on the Thursday, I basically started to lose everything really quickly. And I started to lose hope and I thought, well, that's it. And I then put a whole series of speculative bets on ridiculous accumulators that not even I thought had a chance. And I then had one bit of luck that I don't believe will ever happen again, when essentially one jockey won most of the races. I had it in this accumulator amongst various different bets. And suddenly the money I'd started with at the beginning of the week had become £58,000.
Jesus.
That's obviously an extraordinary amount of money. It's a life-changing amount of money. But to me at that moment in my life, it was honestly worthless. It was a number in the top right-hand corner of a computer screen that had to be 10 times that amount to pay off all my debts. And so the following day, out of desperation, because I knew not only was it the end of the festival, but that was kind of the point where I was in my next meeting and everything was going to come to a head. I did the most stupid thing and I put it all on one bet, on one horse in one horse race, the Cheltenham Gold Cup in March 2018. And I said to myself at that point in my life, if that horse wins, I'll win the money back. And I honestly believed I would pay everybody back. It would get rid of the debts. Yes, I know I'll still lose my house and my job, but life can go on. If that doesn't, then I'm going to do the unthinkable and kill myself. I watched the horse come second by a couple of lengths in what people regard as one of the greatest races ever. Not for me. My whole world came crashing down. And yeah, I then, over the course of the next 36, 48 hours, I attempted suicide in various different ways. And eventually, before doing the unthinkable, I reached out for help, which was obviously the best decision I ever made. I decided that I had no option but to tell somebody, and I, at that point in my life, could only tell one person, and that was my best mate, who happens to be my little brother. There was numerous different reasons why it was him, but I essentially told him. Unfortunately for me, he responded in a way that saved my life. I don't think he appreciated quite where I was or what was about to happen and the proximity to it. Otherwise, I think he probably would have reacted differently, but his reaction was what I needed to hear. And it stopped me doing what I was about to do, because it made me think about other people, not just myself. And I thought to myself, I can't do this to them. And so I didn't do what I was about to do. Obviously the best decision I ever made. And I always say, stood there in a complete state. It was probably the best feeling I've ever had, because I felt so relieved. I had finally told people I was dealing with this problem that I really couldn't deal with myself, and I could get the help that actually deep down I was so desperate for. And I knew at that point that that didn't solve everything, but it meant I could move forward. And it was just the start, but it was the biggest and by far the hardest thing to do. But from that moment, everything got easier.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the problem shared is a problem halved. It really does mean something. And I think, like, even thinking of problems that I had when I was younger, and I would speak to a pal, and it really does lift a weight off your mind. Like, it truly does alleviate so much stress. What was it that your brother kind of said to you that made you stop and think? How come what he said to you hit you harder, if that makes sense, than other things?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very different character and personality to me. He's pretty direct. He's pretty sort of matter of fact about things, and whilst being empathetic at the same time, of course. But essentially what he said to me was, look, I don't understand, and I will never understand what can be that bad. But he basically said, please don't you dare do what you're about to do, because I and others will really struggle to cope. So he said, whatever is going on, we all know that you're facing struggles, although you might not think we know, but you've got to talk to us, and you've got to be open. You've got to be honest, and we're going to support you, and we will get through this together. And that is what I needed to hear. And that's what made a difference. And of course, then when I came clean to my family, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, people's reaction was so different to what I thought it was going to be, because I'd played in my head that everybody was going to go mad, people were going to disown me. That wasn't the case. But I also, and it, I have to be careful how I say this, but I also needed some tough love, in the sense that I needed to also be told that in order to stop, in order to do something about it, it had to come from me, and that other people weren't going to be able to do it for me, and that actually people would support me through thick and thin and all the challenges that come with it, but you've got to do something about it, and you've got to drive this, and you've got to want the help, and commit to it, and you're going to have to stop. But knowing that made it so much easier. And that was just the start of what has been a very long journey. But one that has been, I mean, life-changing is the biggest understatement ever. It's feels like I've given up one thing to get everything back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's incredible. And kind of looking at the gambling industry now, has it changed at all since you've been, because you stopped gambling in 2018, and am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, it has changed. There has definitely been some positive steps, some steps in the right direction. There is no way that what happened to me would happen as often or as easily as it did now, because there is a lot more awareness of gambling addiction. They are doing more to protect vulnerable people. Mm-hmm. That said, whilst there is a lot more going on in the kind of making gambling safer space, the accessibility is only increasing. The amount of advertising and exposure is only increasing. The number of different ways which you can gamble, which is often dressed up as other things, is only increasing. So whilst elements are improving, there are other things that I believe are kind of counterproductive. I don't believe gambling is as safe or as fair, and I think that's an important discussion as well, as it should or could be. But I do think that there have been improvements made, and there is far greater awareness and understanding of gambling addiction, and the need to ensure that there is more social responsibility that there once was. I am not anti-gambling. I recognize, as I've said already, that there are people who do it who don't have a problem with it. But the more that can be done to prevent people going through what I did, yes, it's a small minority of people, but those people are important. And I don't believe in any industry there should be practice where you take advantage of vulnerable people or you reward the biggest losers. And so there has definitely been some improvements, but there is still a hell of a long way to go. And the industry still hold all the cards, because they've got all the money, they've got all the power. There are three really important cogs in this space. One is the individual. There has to be some personal responsibility. You can't just blame the industry. Addiction starts with a choice. The government have to do more, particularly to protect young people and the next generation, who are kind of my biggest concern, and the industry itself. And those three areas all have to play a part. But at the moment, as I see it, everybody just tries to blame each other. And so the situation doesn't really get any better. Things take so long to happen that along the way there's people who are getting harmed. There will always be people harmed by gambling, but we need to do more to make sure that less people are.
Yeah. And dealing with a third party, you mentioned the kind of the triangle there of, you know, the consumer, the government, and also the casinos and the actual businesses that are doing these things. That's the problem, is that nobody will take responsibility. Like when I have employees within my team, and the first thing I do is go over their JD, which is their responsibilities, which they know they're responsible for. But none of these areas are being accounted for, and nobody is accountable. So nobody's gonna try and fix it. And I think it's so wrong. Like, it's unbelievably immoral to start rewarding someone based on how much they lose. Like, oh, you've lost 10 grand, here's a free bet. That is, to me, that is just so immoral.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that have very, very strong opinions about it. I have tried really hard in my recovery and the work that I do now to try not to get wrapped up in the political side of it. If I'm brutally honest, there are so many agendas. There is so much hypocrisy. It's a very toxic culture. And I find it exhausting and quite stressful. I try not to think about it too much. So I focus on trying to help individuals or prevent people going down that route in the first place. But there is very definitely more that could and should be done. But I also recognize in all this that it's not one size fits all either. And I've never been a campaigner. It would be like being an alcoholic and trying to shut down every pub. It's never going to happen. But what I do have a fundamental problem with is there are people losing their lives through suicide as a result of gambling. One life lost is too many. So therefore, everybody should be doing what they can to prevent it. But money makes the world go round, sadly, and too many for too many people, that is the focus or the priority. And for as long as that's the case, we're going to have problems.
And you mentioned there the aspect of fairness, and it kind of brings me onto a point that I've seen discussed in lots of other podcasts, especially with like Dana White, who owns the UFC, and people like that, that are humongous spenders. I mean, you're talking multi millions, and they win a massive hand, and all of a sudden the casino just bans them. And you're kind of thinking like, well, they didn't cheat, and just because they kind of played your game and won, you're banning them from the casino. Like, is there an element of kind of trickery that goes on here? I know that, you can't really cheat in a casino, but even if you win big now, they seem to just be banning you. Like, what's the kind of the inside scoop there?
Yeah, I mean, I've been out of the game for 6.5 years now, thank goodness. So I don't really know where we're at with that kind of thing. But what I do know is certainly historically, if you ever took money off them, they were pretty quick to do something about it, shut you down or limit how much you're doing it. And yet if you lost, they were happy to take as much as you wanted. And I know people that are incredibly frustrated in this space because they now can't gamble. It's money that they can afford to lose. They want to do it. They have a very different relationship with it, and they're suddenly not allowed to do it. And the reason that's the case is because the industry will say, well, it's because we're trying to prevent. But I'm not sure how much truth there is in that. And that's where I said at the beginning, and I'll say it again, for me, it needs to become safer and fairer, and those two things. And I don't believe at the moment it's as safe or as fair as it could be.
Yeah. And what are your, I know that we discussed like really briefly there, the kind of the younger generation growing up and the use of kind of mobile phones and these Bet365 and all that kind of stuff, the apps that are coming out, what are your opinions on them? Like, did you used to use an app, or did you just go straight to the bookies kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, my gambling journey looks very different to what it does now for young people, because I started in betting shops and casinos, and then over time it moved to almost exclusively online, but I also still went into betting shops and casinos, whereas most young people who gamble, they'll never ever go in a betting shop in their life or a casino. They'll just do it online on their phone, which means that it becomes accessible 24 hours a day at a click of a button. And so that in itself, I believe, is a bit of a problem, and it kind of promotes this kind of secrecy element as well, or allows people to hide it a lot more easy than you used to be able to. My biggest concern with the next generation is two things, three things. One is the accessibility, which I just mentioned. The second is the exposure that they have to it. There are way too many gambling adverts. I don't believe that gambling adverts are the reason why all people gamble. But what I do know is that we've reached saturation point with regards to these adverts, and it's now become so normalized to young people who aren't legally allowed to do it. Some of the advertising is predatory in its nature, in the fact that they offer you free bets and these offers to open up accounts in the hope that you might engage. So that's another huge concern with young people. I do a lot of work in the education system, and I know now that a lot of young people are gambling when they're not legally allowed to do it. And I strongly believe that's because of the normalization of it, the fact that they're exposed to it. There's so many adverts. But also the kind of hidden element of all this that seems to not enter the discussion enough, and in my opinion gets away with it, is actually the online video gaming industry. Because I believe that a lot of the things that are built into these video games, things like packs, loot boxes, skin betting, these things that young people now are engaging with so much, that they're spending huge amounts of money on, these are actually, in my opinion, forms of gambling. And they're normalizing this type of behavior, but they're deemed to be acceptable. And young people don't understand the links between the two and how one can very definitely be a gateway into the other. There is nothing stopping a young person spending an infinite amount of time or money on a video game. Yet gambling is, yes, not as perhaps it should be, but it is regulated, and there are controls in place. But actually, for young people who are engaging with these types of behavior at a very young age, there's nothing. Parents are ignorant through no fault of their own, because these things didn't exist when they were younger. They didn't have the same accessibility. And so that world is going to cause huge amounts of problems, has to form part of this discussion going forward when it's about protecting the next generation. And that to me is terrifying.
I would agree. And I actually remember there was an app, I'm not sure if you remember this, but it's called Clash of Clans. Do you remember that? It was advertised all over YouTube and all that kind of stuff. It was huge when I was in school, like absolutely humongous. And there was a family friend of mine that the son had Clash of Clans on his iPad or whatever it might have been. And it was linked to their Apple account. And all of a sudden they got a charge for £1,400. And they were thinking, what have I spent on Apple? And it was the kid that was maybe 9 or 10 years old was buying gems so that they could upgrade their palace and all this kind of stuff. And it's like a form of addiction. A game is like a compulsion to some people. Some people get hooked to gaming. Some people get hooked to pornography. Like these are all things that release dopamine in the brain, and they want you to continue doing what you're doing. And you're so right. Gaming is a gateway into gambling, because you are spending the money on something that you deem to be a dopamine releasing metric, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And once you realize that sort of going up a level or whatever in a computer game is not the biggest and most important thing in the world, you yeah. then start to try and replicate those feelings in different ways. And there's advertising that goes on with those things that are linked, and there's crossover, and that's the bit that really concerns me. And it's something that everybody needs to be super aware of.
Yeah. And when you did get help, when you spoke to your brother eventually, and kind of there was that relief aspect, was there certain avenues that you went down? Was there kind of therapy involved, or how did that work for you to kind of wean yourself off that addiction?
Yeah. I was very fortunate in the sense that the treatment that I was able to access, for numerous different reasons, because it was private treatment, meant that I was able to access that help immediately, which sadly not enough people are able to, because of the financial constraint. So I went into treatment. I needed to be in a very protective environment where I wasn't able to do these things. And therefore, when I wasn't, I had to kind of understand the reasons why I was doing it. But I also needed to be around other people who were going through similar things, who were feeling the same things, who were doing the same things. And a lot of people say the opposite of addiction is connection, for very good reason. And actually, that was huge for me, because I kind of understood that I wasn't the only person who was doing the things that I was doing or feeling those things, and it was okay. And I had to have a long, hard look at myself in the mirror during that time, and it was tough. I had to accept what I'd done. I had to own it. But the most important thing actually was understanding my addiction. And those few months of therapy, counseling, all sorts of different forms of treatment allowed me to stand on my own two feet again, have that self-awareness, and gave me the ability to make good rational decisions again. But I always say to people that actually there is no quick fix. I wanted a quick fix. I'm that type of person. I wanted to go into rehab or treatment, however you want to describe it, and walk out however long later and be cured, never have to worry about it again. One of the biggest things for me was to realize that was never going to be the case, and this was something that I was going to deal with every day for the rest of my life. And I'm at peace with that, and every day that goes by it gets easier, and I'm able to navigate the challenges that life throws at all of us a lot better than I used to, without relying on addictive substances and behaviors. But that journey is an ongoing one. And you take a few steps forward and sometimes a few steps back, but it's all part of the process. And it's an important part of the process.
And do you drink alcohol at all, or was it kind of a total, substance ban? I know that one of my friends specifically that he had a drug habit, and he needed to stop everything, because as soon as he had a drink, he would go straight to the drug, or as soon as he had this, he would go straight for the drug. So he needed to dissociate himself from that entirely. Is that kind of the same as you?
Yes and no. I don't do some of the things that I used to. When I was in treatment, I gave up everything. I gave up alcohol for 9 months, because I had a very unhealthy relationship with alcohol throughout my gambling addiction. And I needed to ensure that I didn't stop gambling and just turn to drink. I gave it up for 9 months to prove to myself that I wasn't addicted to gambling. I drink now, but I drink in a very different way to what I used to. I don't drink nearly as much. I drink for the right reasons, in the sense that it's something that's social for me. It's something that's enjoyable. I don't do it in isolation. I don't have a drink because I'm feeling crap or I've had a bad day. I drink because I want to have a drink. I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So it's very different, I believe, but I do have to be really careful with my relationship with it. And there are times where I recognize that because I am that kind of all or nothing type person, there are times where I think, oh my word, like you need to stop. But the difference is I am able to. So there are, I'm now super aware of kind of all different manifestations of addiction. I exercise obsessively. And that's great. And it's seen as like a really positive and healthy thing, which it is, because it benefits my mental health massively and in turn my physical health. But I also still have to be really careful about my relationship with that, because it drives my wife mad, because she knows what I'm like. And if I don't run or exercise one day, and it's important sometimes you don't because your body needs to rest and recover, I'll panic, or I'll say I really need to do something. I'll get stressed, and so it's about managing it. But there are very definite ways that you can channel your addictive personality in more positive ways. Work is, I think you mentioned earlier, work is something else. But again, you have to be really careful that you're not overworking or working too hard, because whilst that might seem great, actually it's very unhealthy and counterproductive. So it's a very complicated thing, and it's quite a wild world that I navigate every day, and other people don't necessarily understand it. They don't realize how much of a battle it is. People think, oh, he's not gambling anymore, he's great. And I am in many ways, but my addiction is a constant battle. But one I'm able to sort of fight a lot better than I once was.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear as well. And so looking back over the entire kind of the stretch over the 13-year period, do you know how much it was you spent in that time? Do you have like a cumulative number?
Yeah, again, I try not to talk too much about money, because it doesn't matter how much money you lose or spend. It's all relative. What can seem an extraordinary amount of money to some people might be nothing to other people. It's about the wider impact it has. That said, over the course of that period of time, obviously I was able to look through a lot of my accounts and get all that information. I think it transpires that I transacted about £2 million worth of bets online. That's obviously not, I didn't lose £2 million. That's winning, that's losing. That was probably the amount staked. I had 76 different online accounts. The numbers were extraordinary. When it all came to a head, I believed I had about £500,000 worth of debt that was consolidated to about £250,000 worth of debt once things like interest rates had been frozen and all these things. So, I mean, the numbers were huge. The numbers were terrifying, and on a much bigger scale than most people. But anybody who's listening, I think it's really important to reiterate that it's not about how big. Big isn't worse, because for some people, actually, they might only be in a few £1,000 worth of debt, but that to them might be a huge amount of money. It might be causing them to feel depressed, suicidal, whatever it might be. So it's not about the money. It's about the impact. And actually, money's money. The wider impact my addiction had on me, the the relationships I lost, the time I'll never get back, the opportunities I let go, the impact that it had on my relationships and family, is way worse than any money I ever lost. And it's not and never just a financial problem.
Yeah, yeah. And then looking into the future, I mean, I know that you're the founder of Game Ed. So what is your take on that, and what's the kind of goal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, once I'd sorted myself out to a degree and focused initially on my recovery, I had a burning desire to share my story with people, to use my experiences to hopefully try and reduce some of the stigma, raise awareness, break down barriers, help people understand addiction and the wider impact. And I've been doing that for the last few years, initially for an organization that specialized in reducing gambling related harm. And then more recently on my own, which focuses on kind of gambling, gaming, addiction and mental health more holistically, particularly with young people, but also with companies and businesses and any organizations really, because it's relevant to all. And I've been doing that in the hope that it might help a few people, whether they're going through it or prevent them from doing it in the first place. And it's been an amazing journey. It's been selfishly great for me and hopefully good for other people and had an impact. But I'm also acutely aware that it's not a forever job. I don't want to spend the rest of my life sharing my story. It's emotionally exhausting. Yeah. Although it does have its positives, but also I don't want gambling and my addiction to define my life. It consumed me for 13 years. It's consumed me for the last 6.5, because it's what I talk about on a day-to-day basis. And it's hopefully helped loads of people, but there is going to come a point in the not too distant future where I think to myself, do you know what? Hopefully I've had a positive impact on people, but I want to move on. I want a new challenge, and I don't want to spend every day talking about it. That said, I will always shout from the rooftops about mental health, about the importance of talking, about looking after yourself, about self-awareness, and never shy away or be embarrassed of my past. I wish I could change it, but I can't. I can only change the future. What that looks like, I don't know. But it's been a kind of wild journey, and there are chapters in life, and yeah, it's who knows, but it's been great to be able to do that. Obviously wrote a book in 2022, which got published, which isn't going to go anywhere, so people can access my story and my past even if I stop speaking every day. So yeah, it's exciting.
Amazing. I think it is so, so beneficial to hear people talking about either these addictions or mental health issues. We've had people on the podcast talk about anorexia, you know, various different issues. And I think it does really, really help spread the awareness, but also take the shame out of it. You know, people hear these stories and they think, oh, I didn't realize that anybody else went through this. I thought it was just me. And it seriously does take the shame out of it. So I just want to thank you so much for kind of taking the time and talking to me and talking through that. And hopefully people listening can get a better understanding for how that can kind of happen, and it raises the profile and awareness of it. Where can people find you if they want to find you? Are you a big social media guy, or are you not really interested?
Yeah, no, I am. Probably less so now than I was, but I am on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm at PatrickFoster02, at PatchFoster on Instagram. I've got my website, which is gam-ed.com. My book is Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict, which is available in all good bookstores, as they say, but also on Amazon. If I can help anybody directly, then do reach out to me. I'm always trying to help individuals as much as raise greater awareness. And as you said, I think so often people are in these situations and they're not doing anything about it because they feel like they're alone. I can assure you, you're most definitely not alone. But also, as hard as you try, it's impossible to deal with these issues yourself. And you used the phrase, a problem shared is a problem halved. It's a motto that I live my life now by. And talking it's hard for some people. It was hard for me, but it's so powerful. And when you do share, you do feel better. The problem doesn't go away, but it definitely helps. And I also think that it's really important if you are around addiction or you are around people who are struggling with their mental health to understand that that's really hard too. Because yeah. I talk to a lot of people that have children or loved ones who are going through addiction, whether it's gambling or anything, and they want nothing more than the person to get help or get better, and it has to come from them. But it's so important that you protect yourself and look after yourself as well, because everybody always focuses on the person who's struggling. It's a struggle for those around it too.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thank you so much, mate. I really appreciate it, and I'll get you on Instagram just after this. I'll follow you on Instagram as well.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been awesome chatting to you, and keep up the great work in raising awareness of all sorts of issues. It's really cool that you're doing that.